All right, good Sunday morning to you. It's Dave Plyer once again on 720 WGN. So former presidential speechwriter Kurt Smith is the author of 17 books, including the classic history of baseball broadcasting, Voices of the Game. He's also the host of Voices of the Game series at the Smithsonian Institution and the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Kurt's wonderful new book, The Presidents and the Pastime, chronicles the historic relationship between baseball, the most American sport, and the U.S. presidency. And joining us live this morning to share that story is Kurt Smith. Good morning, Kurt. It's an honor to have you on the program.
Well, Dave, an honor to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. You know, I knew baseball had an important role in the American presidency when, as a kid, I saw President Reagan hanging out in the booth with, I believe, a relatively sober Harry Carey. Right?
Well, you know, that was quite true. I remember that incident because I was working in the Reagan administration as a speechwriter for several senior cabinet members at the time. And, of course, the Gipper had gotten his start as a broadcaster doing recreations of the games.
Yeah.
Where at WHO in Des Moines, he would get a Spartan encapsulation of the game and then re-embellish games after he got that data. And he, with Harry Carey, talk about two Falstaffian characters. He talked about relatively sober. as you suggest, hosted a series at the Smithsonian Institution in 1992. That was about 5 years before Harry's death. And God bless him. Nobody ever in his life, I believed, ever loved baseball more than Harry.
Yeah, that's
but at that point in his life, there was no difference between Harry smashed and Harry sober. It was wonderful.
It was wonderful. It absolutely was. And you yourself have been writing, obviously, about baseball for decades. The convergence of baseball and the presidency is really bringing the best of your two worlds together.
Well, these are two institutions that I have loved ever since I was little. My mom tells a story, which I'm sure is true because mothers never lie.
They never do.
About how as a kid in a small town that I grew up in upstate New York, I would go to the front porch. My parents had done the great privilege for me of buying our family the World Book Encyclopedia, the great series that salesmen would sell when they came around to front porches of small towns. And I would go to that front porch, and I would sit for hours, absolutely fixated by the World Book, and I would turn to the biographical entries of presidents and also the baseball players, Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle and Ernie Banks. And this is how I developed the great interest and ardor, if you would, in baseball and the presidency. But you know, Dave, I've got a lot of company. These are the great two institutions, our national office and our national game. And I have carried those two loves since childhood ever to today. And I think tens of millions of Americans would agree.
I thought when I first picked up the book and read it that, you know, we were going to be talking about Teddy Roosevelt or Howard Taft, you know, starting the tradition of the first pitch. Mm-hmm. But it goes really all the way back to President Washington. When he was still a general, he was playing a game called Rounders, which is kind of a form of baseball. Yeah.
This is about as Americana as you can get, going back to even before America became a nation, to General Washington, as you suggest. Here he is at Valley Forge in the horrid winter of 1777-78. We're not yet a nation. He's stuck at Valley Forge. The British have us on our ropes. And for hours, he's throwing what we can't call a baseball because there was no game of baseball, but it looked like a baseball, and he's throwing it with his aide-de-camp back and forth while he's mentally strategizing about what comes next. And he did so for a long time until he finally decided to break out. And so baseball was with us then. And then, of course, as he became a president, then in the book I segue to Lincoln, who... Of course, from Illinois, and in 1860, he is playing town ball, which is what they called baseball at that point, when a delegation of GOP officials from Chicago come to him at Springfield and interrupt him during a game of town ball to tell him that he's been delegated as the Republican nominee for president. And he says, "Gentlemen, I'm glad that you have apparently welcome news, but you'll have to wait until I complete my turn at bat."
I love that.
This is a man with his priorities straight even then.
Absolutely.
Then he becomes president. He goes to the White House, and he plays games on the South Lot, which is what today we call the Ellipse, where the National Christmas Tree is lit every year, outside. And then he takes the game inside, where he uses the corridors of the White House as base paths. Wow. And with a frame of 6'4", he sped that, well, we won't know that it's 90 feet that he used between home plate and first base, but you can imagine that he covered that acreage rather fast.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. Fast forward a little bit to Teddy Roosevelt. He was not a guy that liked baseball. He did not like baseball, but he knew he had to embrace it.
Yes, not liking it is the understatement of the year.
Yeah.
He hated it. He loathed it. It was too mollycoddle for him. That was his term, his favorite adjective. Too gentle and pacific. He liked violence and gore and a possible death in his sports. And baseball was batting 0-for-3. But the sticky wicket is, as the Brits would say, that the game was so monumentally popular even then, he knew if he, or feared at least, that if he said so, he would literally be booted out of office in the 1904 election.
Yeah.
So baseball was the only thing, Dave, in his life that defeated him. This is a man that charged up San Juan Hill, militaristic foreign policy, sent the great American white fleet around the world. He couldn't say a word. He had to feign, pretend that he actually liked the game. It almost killed him to do so.
Yeah. And then completely, Kurt, on the other end of the spectrum, Howard Taft, you know, he was the first guy to throw out a first pitch in 1910. And this is a guy who played baseball. He played baseball himself. But he really loved the game.
William Howard Taft was an amateur baseball pitcher in the 1880s who wanted to make the bigs. He failed miserably in making the bigs as a pitcher. He settled for being president. And he took that affection to his official duties. As you suggest, on April 10, 1910, he became the first president to throw a first pitch before the season began. It became an institution that endures to this day. And he was rather large. He had the tails and the top hat, and he was graceful as a gazelle, but he weighed all 300 pounds. And so to put him in a box seat at the forerunner of Griffith Stadium in Washington, they had to take out two box seats and install this mammoth larger seat so that he could sit.
Yeah.
And he threw out the first pitch. He later became a Supreme Court justice, the head of the court, and he staged his speaking schedule around the country in major league cities so that he could give a speech and then go to a ball game in the park that afternoon. So that he combined these two loves all of his life, the law and baseball as well.
Yeah, he kind of helped put baseball really, you know, on the public's mind as being important, and I think that's
as the pastime. Primus inter pares is the Latin term. I know that only because my mom was a former Latin teacher. It means first among equals, and that's what baseball became.
Most presidents found baseball to be necessary, just as they ran for office and so forth, but none more than FDR.
Well, FDR is on the cover of presidents in the past time for several good reasons. He won four straight terms, and he was a spectacularly effective president. He probably saved us during the Depression, and he certainly saved us during World War II, he and Winston Churchill. He also saved baseball, of slightly less import, but interesting nonetheless. After the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, December 7th of 1941, baseball was clueless. What happens next? Do we close up shop? Do we go out of business? Do we proceed in a diminished state? It simply didn't know. So it wrote FDR a letter asking guidance. The very next day, on January 15th of 1942, Franklin Roosevelt held a press conference in the Oval Office. He read, Dave, aloud his letter that he wrote back to baseball at the press conference. This was how important baseball was to the morale of the nation.
The green light?
What he said was this. Yes, he read it aloud. And he said baseball, not simply he suggested, but he said that baseball should be played for the entirety of the war until it was assumed that we would win. Total victory. He said baseball should be played because it would enhance the morale of the home front, people here at home, housewives, and also at the time, people who worked the steel mills and the textile factories, and kids. And, of course, the two fronts abroad, the Pacific and the European. And he was right. He knew his game and he knew his country because later it was shown that except for letters that people abroad, the troops got from loved ones here at home, nothing buoyed abroad their morale more than getting box scores and game accounts of newspapers that they received, which is why I propose in this book that Franklin Roosevelt be inducted posthumously by the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown. Yeah. There are 317 plaques in the Hall of Fame. I know because I was there, have been twice to speak in recent weeks. None of them include the phrase, "Save baseball." Franklin Roosevelt saved baseball.
He did. And even so, after only 2 months in office, he connected baseball in one of his first fireside chats, but he also turned baseball into many conversations with the American people. He found that relationship good for, as you said, for morale, but it was always kind of part of his thread.
Well, I teach public speaking among my courses in my day job at the University of Rochester in upstate New York. Terrific school. And we talk about Franklin Roosevelt, and he was the gold standard, in my view, when it came to public speaking. He and Ronald Reagan. Because he was not interested in appearing to be an intellectual, although in many ways he was. He was interested in establishing an affinity, an empathy with the American people. And he found that one way of doing it was baseball. As you suggest, two months into his first term as president, he gives a fireside chat. And he says, and I'm paraphrasing, but I have it almost, I think, exact. He says, I do not propose that I'm going to bat 1,000 in all of the programs that I propose. What I seek is the highest possible batting average. And he says something to the effect of between 300 and 400 batting average, which, you know, is something that Ted Williams might achieve. And he puts it in those terms. And this is a presidential first. Herbert Hoover, bless his soul, who was vilified during the Depression, if you read his speeches, they were lovely and they were convoluted, and it was astonishing that anyone understood them, perhaps even Hoover. But then you get to Roosevelt, and there was one speech in which he says, now if I, in terms of Lend-Lease, now if I get my $15 back, I am in pretty good shape. He's talking about the ability to get a garden hose back during a fire. Well, a five-year-old can understand that.
Sure, sure, of
what
course.
What a difference.
Yeah,
and so this is how Roosevelt appealed to America.
Fast forward a little bit, you also connect music with baseball in the presidency, especially during the Carter years.
Well, yes. You know, in terms of Mrs. Carter, you mean?
Yes.
Well, Lillian Carter, the president's mother, was a wonderful teacher of Jimmy Carter. And she was a Renaissance woman. She could have been commissioner. She could have owned a Major League ball club had she come along, let's say, a half a century later. And she had been a baseball aficionado all of her life, to such an extent that she and her husband had, in the 1930s and 40s, when the peanut crop got done every year, they hopped in the jalopy in Georgia, and they picked a different city every year. I think this is what you're alluding to,
mm-hmm.
Are you not?
Yes, I am. Absolutely.
And yes, and they got, it's an amazing baseball lover's odyssey. And one year they would go, for example, to a Pittsburgh, and they would go in a hotel, and they would spend 2 weeks, and they would watch an entire Pirates homestand. And the next year they would go to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And spend 2 weeks, and they would see an entire Dodgers homestand. Next year, they would go to Cincinnati, same thing. So after 13 or 14 years, they saw literally every Major League Baseball club in the land. Nobody that I have ever heard of,
yeah.
And I have asked this in every speech that I have given this year, has done this. She was also a pianist. She was also a volunteer of the Peace Corps. She was also a professional wrestling patron. This is a Renaissance woman, and she instilled this DNA of baseball in her son's performance, so that even though he was not a fan of baseball in the White House, he had a Puritan distaste for sloth. He was a great baseball fan before he became president, and he has been a great baseball fan after becoming president. This is one of the great research items that I found in the book.
Yeah.
Lillian Carter is one of the heroines of the
right.
book.
Right.
The heroine, she is.
No, I found that to be very fascinating. Absolutely. George W. Bush became the first former owner of a major league team to assume the presidency. He played Little League Baseball growing up in Texas, dreaming of following in the footsteps of Willie Mays. Before serving governor of Texas, Bush was the managing partner of the Rangers. I think people forget that.
Well, he was in his baseball was in his blood because of his dad, for whom I wrote speeches for 4 years in the White House, 1989 through 93, and then for 4 years afterward, heading a speech staff in a volunteer capacity. So no White House family has ever looked, well, I would suggest, more than the family Bush. And his son, whom I've spoken to several times just about baseball, really loved it ever since he was a kid growing up in Texas. He would collect baseball cards. To this day, he can name the infield of the 1958 St. Louis Cardinals. I know because I tested him once. And he grew up with the Houston Colt 45s before they became named the Houston Astros. And I think that we remember him best for his heroic effort in the 2001 World Series. Next to Roosevelt, the item that is raised most frequently by people with whom I speak this year, talking about the president in the pastime, is what he did before Game 3 of the 2001 World Series. This is 7 weeks after 9/11.
Right.
And he is throwing out the first ball at Yankee Stadium. And Dave, amazingly so, and again, this is research that stunned me. No president had ever been to a World Series game at Yankee Stadium.
Isn't it crazy?
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Considering the dozens of World Series that the Yankees have been a part of at the big ballpark in the Bronx. So, the drama and the almost atavistic cry for simple retribution, for recompense, for a revenge, if you would, rifling through the triple tiers of Yankee Stadium that night was electric. And I think not simply was felt at Yankee Stadium.
No, for all
really
of America. Oh,
through,
yeah.
It was through the television.
I remember that. Oh.
Every viewer in the country.
Absolutely.
And there's Bush. And he's in the bowels of Yankee Stadium throwing the ball with Derek Jeter back and forth, warming up.
Yeah.
And Jeter says, "Mr. President, I think you ought to throw it from the mound, not from in front of the mound, or people are going to boo you."
Yeah, right.
And Derek says to Bush, and Bush says, "Well, Derek, whatever you think, I'll do." So he goes to the mound.
Yeah.
And anyone who's ever tried to throw out a first ball from the mound knows what a difficult feat this is. He winds up. He gets a great ovation from the crowd. He goes to the mound. He winds up, and he throws a perfect strike.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone remembers that moment.
Absolutely.
Could not have split the plate more perfectly had he walked to the plate and put the ball in the catcher's mitt. The crowd's roar must have been heard 15 miles away in Jersey City. It was a spectacular, heroic, unanswerable night.
Absolutely.
And no one who has ever seen that moment will forget it.
No, and I haven't as well. We get live text, Kurt, on the show from listeners that ask questions, and the most common question I've got is, what is President Trump's view of baseball, and is Trump the first president since the days when Taft threw out the first pitch not to ever throw out a first pitch at a baseball game?
Well, Carter didn't, as president in the regular season, he did in Game 7 of the 1979 World Series. And Carter, frankly, was treated rather roughly by Oriole players when he went into the clubhouse. Rick Dempsey of the Orioles said, "What are you doing here so late?" And in fact, he issued a profanity toward the president, which was totally uncalled for.
Of course. Yeah.
But also uncalled for is Donald Trump not having been to a baseball game.
Yeah,
I write about this in the book, and I've talked about it frequently. He has no business snubbing opening day. This is a presidential right far bigger than the president of the United States. He should be there. He talks about making America great again. Well, this is one way that he can make America great again. I write in the book, and this surprises many people. It surprised me. Donald Trump grew up a great baseball fan. He grew up with the Maris and Manly Yankees, that spectacular murderer's row, if you would, Yankees of the 1960s. And he played baseball at New York Military Academy, which is a prep school north of New York City. He was a very, very fine baseball player.
That's why it baffles me.
He had no speed, but he was very stout. He was very strong. He was a pull hitter from the right side of the plate. Dave, he was so good, and I talked to scouts about this, that both the Philadelphia Phillies and my team, the Boston Red Sox, wanted to sign him.
Wow.
They thought he could be a Major League Baseball player. And I know, as a Red Sox fan, and anybody who knows the Sox knows Fenway Park and that short left field wall, Donald Trump could have pummeled the wall at left field at Fenway Park. The short left field, short 310 feet. The Sox certainly thought so. So he could have played big league ball. But as he said, and how prophetic is this? He said, and I quote, I didn't want baseball money. I wanted to make real money.
Oh, man.
And real money he did.
But to snub it now, this one, I will say, it's a tough one.
Before he became president, he threw out the first ball at Yankee Stadium, at Fenway Park, and at Wrigley Field. Before he became president, in the early part of this decade, he was a regular on sports talk radio. He loves the game. So why hasn't he thrown out the first pitch? There are two theories. One is that he's not in the greatest of physical shape, and he couldn't throw a regular first ball from the pitcher's mound. He doesn't have to. It used to be regular practice before Ronald Reagan that the president could simply stand in his presidential box in the first row of seats and throw the ball to the catcher 20 feet away. Surely he can do that.
Of course.
The other theory is the assumption that I believe, and that is that he is afraid of being booed by the spectacularly partisan crowd, and it would be an anti-party
in Washington.
In Washington.
Yeah.
He got 4% of the vote against Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Yeah.
He would be booed.
There's no question
about it. But you know something? It comes from the territory. My view is this. Other Republican presidents have been booed. Reagan was booed. Bush 43 was booed. The man for whom I worked, Bush 41, was booed. Trump would be booed. Big deal.
Right.
It comes with the terrain. Put your jacket on. Go out to Nationals Park. Go to the mound or throw from the first seat. Show your moxie. Do your job. Get some peanuts and popcorn, enjoy the game, and be president of the United States. That's my view for what it's worth.
I'm with you, Kurt. And Kurt's new book is The Presidents and the Pastime, and you can get it wherever books are sold. And for more on what Kurt is up to, please visit KurtSmithUSA.com. Kurt, honor to have you on the program, sir. Terrific book, and I'm so glad you got up early with us this morning, sir.
Dave, coffee will take me anywhere.
That's fantastic. Thank you again. Enjoy your Sunday, sir.
Thank you much.
All right, take care. All right, news is next on 720 WGN.